position number 21645, row 3.
More reel three.
After my bout of sandfly fever, I was drafted to a minesweeper, HMS Speedy, and we were sweeping mines in Malta Grand Harbour, and we've been very successful and had in fact got to our 99th mine. And we were obviously trying for 100. And we were just outside the harbour one day, and let me just think. That's right, we were sweeping for this mine, and we were hit by a mine. And I was on duty, and I flashed a signal to the signal station in Valletta to saying we were mined in so-and-so position, see? And the Valletta signalman read it as we had sunk a mine in to make up our 100th mine. And in fact, if you know your Morse code, a D and an S are three dots for an S, I think it's a dash and two dots for a D. And they'd read it as mind. No, they read it as mines in position so-and-so. In fact, I'd sent mind and in position so-and-so. So we didn't actually get our 100th mine. Sorry, that's a bit complicated, that.
So they had assumed that there was no mishap.
They assumed there was no mishap, and there we were, wallowing around, having been mined. But it wasn't too serious, luckily. And we got back into harbour. But then, after that little episode, I was sent to HMS Dido, which was in Malta. She was a light cruiser. And we were operating from out of Naples to Anzio, which Anzio beachhead landings had taken place then, and there was enormous fighting going on all the time, and ashore they're having a frightful time. And we were sent to Anzio every day from Naples to bombard the Germans ashore in Anzio, and it was quite an experience, because they were just experimenting with radio-controlled bombs, and on one occasion there was another cruiser had been sent out from England to replace us. And I think I'm right in saying it was a Spartan. Anyway, there was an air raid during the night, and our chief telegraphist had switched on his equipment and jammed the radio-controlled bombs, which were being directed at us. Unfortunately for the Spartan, they were directed straight at her, and in fact sank her. And I was sent in one of the whalers to go and collect survivors. It was a horrendous air raid, and we were sent off in this whaler to collect survivors, and Dido, in fact, up anchored and scarpered back to Naples and left us there with the survivors. And we were taken to two American destroyers, which were still there and looked after until Dido came back and collected us probably the next day or so. But poor old Spartan, he wasn't very pleased with us, I don't think. But the time we had at Anzio was quite quite unpleasant, actually, because they were retaliating and we were being fired upon, but we managed to keep out of range most of the time. But there were a lot of air raids going on. And I remember that it was my 21st birthday, and I was having an examination in the control room. I don't know what kind of exam it was, some coding exam, I think it was another. And I think the petty officer or something in charge of it said to somebody, he said, "What's the matter with Maul, you see?" So they said, "Oh, it's his 21st birthday." So he said, "Oh, all right, we'll pass him then, because obviously he's had the rum tot passed around already." And there's the usual thing on one's birthday. The rum ration was passed around from all the other colleagues, and one would drank as much as one could, and he knocked you out.
What condition were these Spartan survivors in?
The ones we had on board, they seemed to be reasonably fair condition. I don't really remember much about that. It was pitch black, and we just sort of dragged them on board the whaler and took them across to the American destroyer. But there was quite a lot of, I think it was quite a loss of life. And it was a pretty unpleasant experience, but it could so easily have been the Dido. It was amazing how he did it. I don't know, but these bombs were defected away from us, but unfortunately they hit another ship. The Dido was due to go home because I'd been abroad since 1942, and we were then into late 1944, I think. And she was due to go home, and we used to go to Anzio and bombard, as I say, every day, and then go back to Naples at night. And the gun barrels became so distorted with the amount of bombardment we were doing that they had to be replaced. And they had replacements in Naples, which meant that obviously we were out of action for two or three days while they were being done, and then went back to Anzio again. And when we used to go into Naples harbour at night, we used to anchor right close in shore. In our case, we were anchored right alongside a famous resort called Sorrento, which is a lovely place, and as close in as we could get, because the Italians were dropping circling torpedoes.
The Germans?
Yes, the Germans as well, I suppose. They were Italian and Germans, yes. And they used to do an awful lot of damage with these things. They used to go round and round and round until they hit something. See, these circling torpedoes in Naples Harbour. So we used to have to keep in very close in the hope that by the time they got to the outer limits of the circling, they'd run out of steam. And we weren't hit. But one extraordinary thing happened while we were there is Vesuvius erupted the last time it ever happened then. And it was a most extraordinary sight. And the whole of the ship was covered, the upper deck of the ship was covered in this grey ash. Most weird business. And it was a sight I should never forget. I got a photograph of it actually somewhere. And anyway, we carried on with this Anzio exercise for quite a long time. And then one night we were going into Naples, and I was in the mess having supper, Bangers and Mash, I think it was, and there was a most almighty crash, and one of the huge American Liberty boats, as they were called, I think they were called Liberty boats. Not Liberty boats, hold on. Yes. Sorry, my mind's gone. I think they're called Liberty boats, which were being built in the States very, very quickly and sent over to help with the troops and one thing and another. She hit us, came straight inboard into the side of the ship where we were actually having supper in our mess. And one night we were going back into Naples Harbour, and I was on the mess deck having supper. I think it was having Bangers and Mash. And suddenly there was an almighty crash, and one of these huge American Liberty ships crashed into the starboard side of Dido and came right inboard into our mess deck. And this enormous bow came towards us, frightened the life out of us, obviously. And unfortunately, there were a lot of casualties on the mess deck. But I, luckily, once again, got away scot-free. And apart from the fact that I was very shaken up, and I went off to see a chum of mine, and he said I jabbered away for about half an hour. I hadn't a clue what I was talking about. And we were obviously taken into dry dock and we were out of action for a long time. And it was a very unpleasant experience, as you can imagine. And I lost a lot of friends on the mess deck that night. And then, as far as I can remember, the next step was getting home. but I can't remember how I did it. What ship I was in.
So you'd finished with the Dido?
I left Dido then, and I think, as far as I can remember, I think I came home in a convoy ship myself. It was either the It was a Reno del Pacifico. That's right. It was a ship which was going to back to England, and I went back in her, and went down to Portsmouth Barracks because I was what's known as a Portsmouth rating, and was hanging around in Portsmouth Barracks waiting for another draft to somewhere else, and while I was there, there was the bus strike of Portsmouth bus drivers, and they asked for volunteers from the barracks for anybody to drive the buses. So I, having never driven a car even, let alone buses, then I learned how to drive a motorcycle on a commando course, so I thought, oh, if I can do that, I can drive a double-decker bus. So I volunteered. But luckily, the strike was over before I could do much damage. I remember cutting the corners on the roundabouts quite often, but nothing too serious. Anyway.
So this was a wartime bus strike, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes. It was, I don't know, a dispute about something or other, but it didn't last very long. But they didn't even ask you whether you could drive. It's most weird. Anyway, eventually I was sent to, where was I sent to? Oh yes, right up to the north, to Scapa Flow, to join a destroyer called the Oraby, HMS Oraby. She was a lovely ship. She was pretty new, and she was one of the O-class destroyers which were doing the Russian convoys. And the senior ship was the Onslow, I think. And it was all right in the height of the time when we were taking ships in convoy up to Russia, much needed supplies all the time, and there was a lot of action. But as I said earlier, we had 3 weeks of absolutely foul weather going up on the first one, and the Germans who operated from Narvik couldn't even get to sea to attack us because the weather was so ghastly. The submarines weren't able to operate, aircraft weren't able to fly, and we had about 500 tons of ice on the upper deck. It was unbelievable, and we used to have chipping parties all the time clearing the ice, because if you got too much, the ships were liable to turn turtle with the weight of the ice on the upper deck. So we spent our entire life ice chipping virtually, and of course the Germans would have been in the same state. So we didn't see too much action. Submarines were able to operate a bit, but nothing too serious. And we got through on our first convoy without too much loss. I think we probably lost about 9 ships, I think, but which is nothing really compared with some of them. And we went up to Murmansk, which is the most ghastly place I've ever been in my life. It's completely barren. The poor inhabitants sort of lived underground in caves and igloos and things like that, and it was just complete waste, frozen wasteland. And it was 3 weeks up there, and then we had...
You were actually ashore?
We didn't really go ashore. We went tried to play football once. We couldn't even stand up. but the conditions on the ship were terrible, because being on the bridge all the time, we weren't allowed to go below decks when we were off duty. We weren't allowed to change our clothes. We weren't allowed to shave, and we used to go into a sort of little cubby hole when we were off duty and just get our heads down, sleep it off, and then go back on duty again. And that was 3 weeks up and 3 weeks down. And in my case, I had a terrible time because I take size 13 in shoes, and I could not get a pair of sea boots to fit me of any description. And I kitted myself out with about 8 pairs of, in those days we call them plimsolls, sort of the things before trainers. And I used to change them about every 20 minutes. They were soaked through, and then put them on the radiator to dry, because I was scared stiff of getting frostbite, because it was the conditions were absolutely appalling. But I can never to this day understand why I didn't get frostbite, because without proper sea boots, it was desperate. But I did, and...
So you didn't go ashore at all?
Well, not really, no. We only sort of... Well, there wasn't anything to go ashore for. There was no nothing, no shops, no nothing. And we as I say, we just went to get a bit of exercise, and we could hardly stand up. I mean, all the roads were frozen and everything. A ghastly place. And there was this harbour full of fishing boats and things like that. And we then refuelled and one thing and another, turned around and came back again.
What was the attitude of the Russians towards you?
Oh, they were very friendly. And they were very pleased to see us, of course, because we were bringing supplies and goods of all description. I was awarded the Russian medal. for being on the Russian convoys a few years ago, actually. I had to go to the Russian embassy and get it. And then we had a rest in Scapa Flow, which wasn't much fun, which is a pretty awful place too. And then back again to another Russian convoy, doing the same thing again. And
still in the Oraby.
Still in the Oraby. And I'd been made up to leading signalman by then. Very high rank, of course. And then eventually I went back to Portsmouth Barracks. I don't remember what happened there, but I soon got to sea again. I didn't like the barracks a bit. I went, joined Castle class corvette called the Pevensey Castle, which was doing escort Atlantic convoy duties. I don't honestly know what on earth we were expected to do, because we were escorting the two queens across the Atlantic, the Queen Elizabeth and the Queen Mary, and of course they were going at about 32 knots. We couldn't do much more than about 16, I don't think. So what use we were, I don't know, but because they were way ahead of us. And then we used to turn around mid-Atlantic and come back again. And somebody came out from the other side to take over. And again, wasn't particularly pleasant, because the weather was pretty foul. It's a very small ship. at
Why did you prefer being at sea in a ship to being in barracks?
Oh, it's no fun. Just wandering around barracks all day long. It's I love being at sea. The whole thing about being in the Navy was to get to sea, and more sea time I got, the better I loved it, even under adverse conditions. I had an amazing time, actually. I went to every theatre of war and saw a lot of action, but far better than just being stuck in a barracks doing sort of patrol duties and things. It was awful.
So it was a question of boredom.
Yes, it was, more than anything else, I think. And
Or more discipline in the barracks?
yes, quite a bit of discipline. That it was just literally boredom. You hadn't got anything to do. You just waited for another draft, another ship, sort of thing. And I used to go home to my sister's house in Bognor Regis most nights, and she sort of put me up, and I used to catch an early morning train back to the barracks, and I did that for quite a long time. At
Did you run into the enemy whilst you were doing the Atlantic convoys in Pevensey Castle?
No, don't think we did. I don't think we had much action at all. In fact, we weren't.
Because this must have presumably been 1945.
Yes, it was. We were getting on a bit then.
So did you end the war in the ship?
No, I didn't. I just trying to think which was the next one. I don't think there was another one. But it's quite a while. And then, oh yes, I remember what happened. I was selected for a commission, known as a upper yardman. We had a white band on our caps and one thing or other. And I, from being a leading seaman, I became, as I say, an upper yardman.
What
And I
exactly is an upper yardman?
upper yardman is a candidate selected for a commission from the lower deck, as a regular sailor. See, I'd signed on for 12 years as a boy, and had been selected to get a commission, in a permanent commission, and I was sent to HMS Raleigh down in Torpoint, Point, where the courses were taking place. And we were getting on the course and quite well, but unfortunately I developed the most appalling varicose veins in both my legs, and I was unfortunately taken off the course and sent to hospital in Dorchester, I think it was, or somewhere like that, to be operated on. And unfortunately, having been taken off the course, you could never get back on it again. So I never obtained a commission. Very sad in a way, but not to worry. And
Were the varicose veins a result of war service or ship service?
I really can't answer that one. They just suddenly appeared. Oh, I remember what happened. I was playing rugger one day and I was kicked very badly on my shin, and I think it burst one of the veins or something. And this is what really caused because the seriousness of it. And otherwise, I was going to try and struggle on, I think, to go through the course. And anyway, unfortunately, I didn't. And I failed the course and was invalided to this hospital for this op. And then, so after that,